Welcome along to Wise Men's Seer. I'm Stephen Goldsmith. Gareth Barker is here too. No question of the week this week. So there's no installments of the critically acclaimed series The Flat.
Criticised, whatever.
Which means we're going to have to gas on a little bit longer than normal. Guy Foster is a guy you turn to when such issues arise. Freelance journalist now, of course. Can you speak at length about a draw, Gary? Wins are easy to get excited about. Defeats sort of give you a platform for a rant. 1-1 draw?
I think I can probably speak at length about anything.
Good,
really,
we'll give it a good go.
We're going to be all right.
Okay. Paul Dobson, a.k.a. Sobs, assistant editor, stroke writer type thingy for A Love Supreme, who we're in association with, remember, has his Movember thing going on. Like going all right.
Can you see it?
I did notice it.
Looks better on radio.
Well, we could post pictures up, Gareth. Should we not do that?
We could, if you want. I mean, is there a market for that? What we're here for?
Possibly. Well, we could talk about football. So we could start about that. I'm going to come to you first.
I'll tell you about the fact that I got had a terrible lunch experience today. We'll talk about that if you want.
We'll start the football, but I will start with you for a change, actually, because we'll sometimes go on for 10 minutes before I ask for your input. And the listener is missing out, I think. Right. A draw was what most people expected, I reckon. Speaking of people before the game, a lot of people predicted that. In a way, does that show in itself that perhaps people have more belief in Gus and this side than we may think? Because, you know, ordinarily a side gets thumped 8-0. They then make the mistakes like they did against Arsenal. The fans of that side would then think they would comfortably lose at home to somebody like Everton, I guess.
Well, the fact that they won on Monday night probably helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, fans, like a lot of supporters, not everyone tend to go game to game, don't you? You win a game, you think you're going to win the next one, you lose a game, you think you're going to lose. So I think that probably had something to do with it. I think that short-termism of being a football supporter, I guess. I mean, on the Interlive podcast, we all sort of predicted a draw, but we predict a positive result every game, so that's not really a gauge for anything. So,
but most people I spoke to thought 1-1, wherever you lads think it was going to go before.
I'd have took a draw before.
Would you?
I would have took a draw before, but having sat through the game, I was a little bit disappointed that we couldn't get over the line and get all 3 points, to be honest.
Which is the feeling you want after a draw, isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely. Sobs, happy
enough? Yeah, I completely agree with that. I was, you know, that's before Andrew said, well, of course I want us to win, but a draw is possible. Everton could win it because they're a decent side, although the side they played on Thursday wasn't much cop, to be honest. But at the end of the game, I was more than a little bit disappointed that we hadn't got the second goal, although they defended very well and stopped us getting too many shots through, but we could have got it.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about Evans defending in a little bit. I want to hear on Gus now on being hard to beat. First, set you up with this question. Gus was asked if he would have taken a draw before the game.
No, I disagree with you. No, we don't. We don't plan 3 points here, one there, we can lose this one. No, and I promise no. The idea was to compete. Last year we were maybe, you know, closer to get the win, and we lost with an own goal. Today, we play our way. You know, I don't think it's something spectacular. I don't think it's magnificent, but we made it difficult. We learned from previous Everton games, from Thursday, how Lille gave the chance to Everton to score 3 and have a few more chances. So we tried to reduce Everton chances to minimum and play the game. You know, creating, arriving, crossing, overlapping, doing the things that you need to do week in, week out. You know, when you have players that they can keep possession, I think, let's compare ourselves with Everton and they know the game that they want to play, then you can control games in a different way. Us, at the moment, it's all, you know, defending proper, everybody behind the ball, and then slowly to start building from there and use the players at the right times to create chances. I think we were, you know, the team that I was expecting. And I hope that now is just a step forward and we forget about those terrible weeks that we had 2 weeks ago.
Gary Foster, being hard to beat may not excite fans, but I think Di Canio proved, didn't he, that if you needlessly attack or leave yourself open in this league, with the players we have, with respect, you're going to get butchered, aren't you?
Being hard to beat against Southampton. So, you know, if you have to watch that every week, then you'd be soul destroying. But hard to beat, it's something to build on. You know, I think it's the basis of where I would always start building from the back, and then
don't want to try and punch above your weight, do you?
No,
but you feel like, I mean, I don't know why I'm going back to Di Canio, but when he was here, you kind of felt that, didn't you? It was 4-4-2. It was open football. He tried and it just backfired. And make yourself hard to beat first, because this league's quite ruthless.
Yeah, I think just going back to Everton, I think it might only be a small mark of how far we've probably come, but it's not so long back that as soon as you mentioned the name Everton or a Sunderland supporter, we all sort of dropped our heads and groaned and went, oh no, not again. Now we were expecting a draw, hoping for a draw. I think we should have had a win yesterday. We didn't get it, so you know, I think that's a mark of the progress that's being made.
Everton aside, to model yourself on, Sobs?
I think it's been said before that they're a team, they're not spectacular. I don't think they've ever been spectacular. They've been a very solid team and well organised, and it is a good model to try and to try and follow. And I guess if we play like we did yesterday, we're organised, and that's half the battle, making yourself hard to beat.
And it's just getting to that point, isn't it? Because Everton were, like you say, like an unspectacular side. They kind of, David Moyes had them hard to beat, like you say, and then when Martinez came in, he sort of added the quality players slowly, didn't he? And it's just important the fans don't think we can just do that instantly, and you know, it's one step at a time. I know it's cliched, but you know, these things take time, don't they?
They do. It'd be nice to be able to pick up on a few players like Everton have been able to pick up on, but I guess that'll happen when people are happy with our stability in terms of place of employment. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think after the Arsenal game, Gareth, we were questioning players' concentration levels, obviously losing 8-0 at Palace and then two stinking goals we gave away against Arsenal. Before the Palace game, we said they would have to concentrate going to Selhurst Park. The players did that, to be fair. Well, maybe not Virginia after 30 seconds, but generally they did that against Everton as well. From start to finish, concentration levels,
yeah, was really good. I think the performance all over the pitch was, you know, pretty much 10 out of 11 players were, you know, spot on. I mean, Bridgewater had a little moment in the second half.
Had a little wobble.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he was under pressure there, and he sort of almost tried to tackle the ball back, and it's gone wrong. But
which we've seen Lee Catamol do.
Yeah, but that can happen. That can happen to, you know, anyone. But it, I mean, the fact that the errors against Arsenal just compounded the errors at Southampton, and yeah, I think, you know, they've recovered really well. You know, I don't think they got the credit they deserved in some quarters for the win at Palace, because a lot of people were talking about it like we were garbage and managed to sneak a result. Well, sometimes in football matches you've got to win areas, and you've got to win battles in certain areas on the pitch. You might not be a fully cohesive unit, but you've got to do what's required to win games, and that takes concentration. And the back four in both the games, the last two games generally, have done that, and they've gone through shake-ups as well, because obviously against Palace we lost Van Aanholt. Revier's gone from right back to left back, and then Revier starting left back. You got Virginia at right back again. Brown's come back in after two shaky games, and then it drops our Clang as a substitute against Palace, and then he has to start the next game, and you know, did very well and was unlucky not to win it at the end, which would have been a nice little retribution for Brown, because he's come under some stick and we've sort of criticised him slightly. We haven't gone over the top, like, but that would have been nice for him to get that goal at the end. But yeah, like you say, the concentration levels were great, and there was an energy to the side, I thought, in all areas yesterday, which was nice to see, especially again Fletcher carrying that on.
Fullbacks are a miss, Gary, aren't they? I mean, there were many occasions when we worked the ball and Van Aanholt would have ordinarily being there to make that long burst and run down the left. Now, I know Revier's doing okay, as well as can be expected. I think quite admirable the way he's playing, really. But I think it was highlighted that, you know, we're missing those guys, the fullbacks, Jones and Van Aanholt.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Van Aanholt gives you another option going forward, not just because he's quick at the back and get back and put a tackle in, but going forward he's an extra option over that one and what have you. But like you say, can't really fault the effort of the new lad Revier. He's come in, done a job. He's been asked to move to another side, and I thought he slotted in quite well, and you couldn't really say that he did anything wrong, I don't think, yesterday.
Shame he didn't, maybe, when he got in. I think he got in a couple of times, but the second time when he didn't open it up, maybe, and just try and curl in the far corner. He tried to pick Fletcher out in the middle, and it was a bit of a shame. Maybe if he was being a bit settled in, he might have felt a bit
Fletcher
more.
Fletcher checked his run just before he put his head down and made the pass. Because Fletcher made the run into the box, Riviere got his head down, and then Fletcher checked his run, but he'd already put his head down, so he put the ball across. It was split second.
Yeah, split second decision. I wouldn't like criticise him too much, but that's a situation where a player who maybe was a bit more comfortable on the side maybe might have just thought, I'll have an effort on goal.
I thought he was going to put his foot through it, like when he got through. Like, I'll be honest.
It reminded us of when Bardsley scored against Man City. It was sort of like a similar situation. I thought, he might have got in there, but Riviere has been good.
To be fair, Bardsley started. I mean, Bardsley and Craig Gardner just used to shoot from anywhere, didn't they? Odds say that one of them was bound to go in sooner or later.
Yeah, but it was worth it for Bardsley because of the Old Trafford thing.
Yeah, he was allowed, yeah.
One of them powder puff shots finally just going in, where they normally just trickle into the keeper's hands. Sobs, I'm absolutely devastated about Van Aanholt being out.
It's a big miss. It's almost like harking back to the days of Mickey Gray. He had a couple of shaky games defensively at the start, but he seems to have grown into that, and he's fast as out, like, and he is, like the lad says, he's a real dangerous attacking option.
But he's better defensively as well now. You say, the first couple of games he was a bit shaky, but he looks again, as good as anybody defensively.
You learn
now
to play with the blocks you've got around you, and he will be a big miss, and it's a shame it's for so long. I'm more than impressed with the French guy, because I looked at him, 34-year-old, it's another Decennia.
And he's playing on the wrong side as well, yeah.
But he had a cracking game on Monday, especially when you consider he had a swap over, and he was solid throughout yesterday. But as you say, perhaps that time he could have had a shot, but then he's only played an hour and a half, 2 hours with those guys, and he's not quite sure what runs they're going to do every time.
Discussion for a different day, but it's going to be interesting to see when Jones comes back who goes and plays on the left, isn't it? Because Jones has done that a lot, but I thought he struggled a bit for us on the left, didn't he? Riviere looks okay, so it'd be an interesting one, that.
It'd be nice to have some options rather than just four. Four people to play.
Yeah.
With Quartez hopefully be back as well. And
well, Quartez, he said, and Alvarez should be back for the next game. So the back four, I think, sound and solid as expected anyway. Watching Everton defend was a delight. We were getting in behind them a lot, and I thought the composure of their back four, they were managing to keep their shape and their line perfectly. Now, in comparison, when you watch Sunderland defend, it was a little bit jagged at times, the line, but we got through it. And we aren't at that standard yet, and that proves when you have a settled back four. I mean, those guys have played together for years now, haven't they? And it just shows again something else we're aiming towards.
Well, I think anybody, any back four, you need consistency. Sunderland haven't had that, obviously with the injuries, so no fault their own really. But like you say, that just shows, Everton, them lads have played together, so you get to know each other's games, and you know who you can trust at the back. And if you're not there, then the guy behind you knows your game and he picks it up for you. Even at local level football, if you play back four long enough together, you get to know each other's game in and out. And I think that showed yesterday with their lads.
Progression, Gareth, still. Because, Brown and O'Shea obviously aren't getting younger, so he is going to have to do something with that eventually. But, it would be good to have a nice solid platform before you start adding players.
Yeah, I mean, Quartez is a lone player, so that's an interesting situation, and he's barely kicked the ball.
It's a chance for him though, isn't it? Because if he comes in and does well, then it's possible that could be a permanent transfer.
If he gets a go, and then you obviously got Virginie, who is again alone but I think that's more to do with the complexity of his contract. That's maybe something that they'll do this summer, maybe, because I think Virginie's been generally very good. I think since he came. I thought he was excellent again, actually, on Sunday. It'll be nice to have some options in there. And like you say, you talk about experience and stuff and being streetwise, and you see Distan yesterday. Like, every time Fletcher went up for the ball, he's just jumped straight through the back of Fletcher, and the referees let it go every single time. He was practically punching Fletcher in the back of the head every time he went up for a header. And like, you just think, how do you get away with that? It certainly helps if you're a defender and you can do that and get away with it. You're going to be a lot more comfortable to think, oh, this is good, I'll just smash him.
You're saying
that a
player should be cute and foul, people?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying,
sound like Neil Warnock after the Palace loss, and he starts saying,
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, maybe the
elbow.
The referee might have stopped, if the referee had maybe stopped that occurring, they might not have had as a comfortable afternoon, because they wouldn't have been able to do that every time the ball went up to Fletcher, who, to be fair to him, did pretty well. Got some good flick-ons and stuff.
That's something of an anomaly, that, isn't it? Neil Warnock, in other words, too nice in the same sentence.
Yeah, it was quite laughable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What do people think of the Tim Howard situation before we carry on sort of reviewing the Sunderland performances of the players individually?
I take it we talked about the was it handball, was it?
Well, it wasn't handball.
Well, I thought it was, because I thought it brushed, I've only seen it a couple of times, but I thought it brushed his arm first before he lay on it, and there was obstruction after that.
That's it, isn't it? Because after the game, even Gus was a little bit confused. He was saying, I'm not sure if it's allowed or if it's good goalkeeping or what, and apparently somebody told me that people on Sky or something were sort of saying, oh, it was really good goalkeeping, and a defender can't sit down and
if you'd
lie
had
on the ball.
Shirt on and done it, you would have got a free kick.
Exactly, yeah.
So they're saying against Leicester, for 1-0 up in the last minute, get the ball in the corner
and lie on it.
I was going to say, Len Shatlin used to sit on it, didn't he, after he dribbled it around three players and then sit on it and then do it again.
I was going to say, y'all going well before.
Wouldn't be allowed to do that now. Well, he might be if what do you call him? Lee Mason's a referee, whatever he's called. Aye.
Man of the match for you, Gareth. Whom?
I'm going to say. Oh, that's a tough one.
I thought you would give me an answer straight away.
Toss up between Bridcut and Larson, but I'd probably go Larson just obviously because he scored the goal in the first half. Just thought he was unbelievable in the first half.
I thought you were going to go for Larson. I thought you'd do it faster than that as well. I thought he was magnificent, to be honest. Second time this season, I've acknowledged his sort of outstanding input, because I haven't been his biggest fan, you know that.
Yeah.
And I'm still not. I'm being honest, I'm still not. But credit where it's due. Subs, marvellous off the ball, I thought.
Yep.
In previous months and years, I think he's quite guilty sometimes of charging in on players.
And
there were a few times
too,
when, whether it be Barkley or whether it be somebody else, had the ball maybe 25, 30 yards out, and I thought Larson's going to go charging in here and he's going to skip past him, and he just sort of kept his distance, kept his shape.
I think that's what they mean when they shout stand him up, which doesn't make much sense, but I think that's probably what it is. You know, just don't dive in, and as you say, he's been guilty of that in the past.
It's doing it in the right place, isn't it? Because we saw John O'Shea against Stoke stand Charlie out at the wrong time. When you're 30 yards from goal, it's pointless going run and dive.
This was part of the success last season in building those good runs that we had, was defending properly, pressing the ball in the right areas, and that's exactly what they did yesterday. And like you say, those moments, like some people get annoyed. This is the bizarre thing.
Get into them.
So Everton have got a lot of the ball, but they're not going anywhere. They're just passing it back and forwards, because the defence in the midfield are sitting and they're stopping them. You don't have to be charging and tackling to stop the other team. You're stopping them. If Sunderland have got the ball and I've heard people say about that situation, is that Everton are dictating the game, the boss in the game, and all this. If Sunderland are in a situation where they're passing the ball sideways in front of the defence, everyone's screaming that they're not creating anything. There's a lack of creativity, doing nothing with it. It's like you can't have it both ways. You know, they've got to defend properly, especially after the last few weeks where they've had those ricks. They've got to get back to that solidity, and that's why Sunderland have won games, like those big games against teams like Man City, Chelsea, Manchester United in recent times, got to a cup final, is because when they've played those games, they've been disciplined in defence, and that gives you your building blocks. Yeah, we're not slicing teams open going forward, but you've got to defend properly, and that
but you also feel like
it.
We're only a couple of players away from being able to do that, though, don't you? Like I just
it's
mentioned now.
It's a pace. The problem is, I think people like want to see us, you know, the one players getting in the box. They want, people getting outside, crossing, people coming onto the ball. That's understandable. But when you haven't got pace up front, we talked about it before, you can't stretch teams to create the space, because Everton defending the same. Everton are defending solidly in a group and stopping the passes, basically. Stopping the key passes. You've got to work the angles. When you've got pace, and if you're defending deep, you can stretch the game quickly, and that's when the pockets open up, and that's when you can get your midfielders running into gaps and commit and make more dangerous sort of runs, and take risks. And at the moment, because we haven't got that pace up front, I really think that's difficult. We've got to, like, sort of nick out chances.
I think there were times, several times yesterday, Adam Johnson was looking to play the Barini ball from last season, but Wickham isn't going to cut inside and zip away at the pace that Barini used to, so Johnson was quite unlucky yesterday in that he had umpteen opportunities to play it, but he thought, well, he's either not going to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Because a few times that season where he just put that cross in and then the Brainy timed his run and got on the end of it. Yeah, 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 absolutely. Still lacking I mean, Gareth's just touched on it there, Gary, that, as I mentioned as well earlier, sometimes we work the ball and then you would have ordinarily seen Van Aanholt make a run down the left. That was absent. Also, you feel we're still lacking a real creator in there, don't you, in the middle of the park. It's been a problem for a few years. I think a lot of people were maybe hoping Rodwell would be that guy. For whatever reason, he isn't. Whether that's just for now, or whether whether he does develop into that player, that's another issue altogether. But you feel happy with Catamolo, Bridcut sitting, then Larson, Gomez or Rodwell, but there's a link missing still, isn't there?
I think there's been a link missing for a few years now. I don't think it's just under Gus. I think we've needed a playmaker, or if you want to see an old-fashioned terms, a guy who just puts his foot on the ball, looks around it and pick out that killer pass.
We had that a little bit with Key last season, didn't we, when he came
a little bit when he felt like playing. I mean, towards the end when he, threw his toys out the pram and wanted to keep himself fit for the World Cup.
Allegedly.
Well, I don't think there's any allegedly about it, is it? He's playing great again now for Swansea now that there's no big game coming up, you know what I mean? So, I think that's missing. But I think also, we've got to be patient, and I think one of the biggest battles Gus has got on his hands, just to go back, is he's got a sort of, some fans' mentality, he's got to win them over. It's great when we're playing one up front and we're playing, like Gareth says, this passing football when we're winning. And when we're not winning, it's not good enough. It should be two men up front and we should be 4-4-2. It should be. It either is good enough.
I don't
or it's
even
not
bother
enough,
engaging
you know.
With people who come up with that now. I think there's
a lot of them out there, and I honestly think that he's still got a job on his hands to convince a lot of Sunderland fans that his way of playing football is the way to go forward.
Do you think that the fans have took it on board faster than you perhaps maybe thought before Gus came? Because that was something I was worried about. Like you say, people wanted sort of fast-paced football, get the ball out wide, two up front. Now, we were never going to get that with Gus. Do you think fans are more like that now? No,
at the top level?
Yeah,
like,
you haven't got to convince me, but what I'm saying is generally, you know.
It's Peter Reeves' fault, isn't it? It is, though, because that's kind of our generation.
That's how you played back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, but Gareth's right, that's how every team is compared to that era, that football side. They had the two wingers and, Quinn and Phillips putting it in the back of the net and get the wingers down wide, get the crosses in, and it's still, there's plenty of Sunderland fans of certain generations who hark back to that. I mean, I had a great comment a few weeks back when we got stuffed 8-0, and this guy in front of me said, it's the worst Sunderland side I've ever seen. I said, really? No. He said, yeah. I said, I tell you what, mate, I said, you must not watch third division football, because I tell you what, it was a horrendous result, it was an abomination, but let's get things into perspective here. The guy's taking the club forward.
Football fans don't do perspective. We have this conversation every week.
That's the thing, though. That's the point, isn't it? We're very fickle, football fans. If we're winning, everything's all right, and he's the best man ever, and that's the way to play football. But as sad as it may be, he's got to keep getting results to win fans over to how he wants to play, and the only way he's going to do it is if this playing one up front and passing it around brings results. That's the only way he's going to win the sort of hearts and minds of plenty of fans.
It's not really one up front either, is it? I mean, it's a 4-3-3.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
5-1
yeah.
off the ball.
My point being that. As soon as it goes wrong, everybody turns around and says, one up front, this, that, the other. That's the point I mean. To win fans over the way he does it, he's got to keep getting results.
That era before, it was like a lunar eclipse, a comet, It was like one of those things where we had Quinn, we had Phillips, and it was like magic. And then, speaking of magic, you had Johnston, and you had Summerby. And then it was Yad Schwartz. And it was like just all came together at that right time. And it was, so my dad always used to say, it's not like this every week.
Yeah.
Just remember, it's not like this every week. Because I got my season ticket in 97 when I was, 13, 14 years old or whatever. And that was the first time I started going a lot, And that's what you thought was going to, this is great, this, beating teams 4-0, 5-0, get promoted, finish 7th twice. It was like, yeah, it's class this, like, isn't it?
I just think back to Terry Butcher's nonsense.
Well, I went when Butcher was there and Buxton and all that, and it was, generally, I mean, that was bad, you know. I mean,
when
you watch,
have
you got any of those DVD, you know, the big match DVDs and all that, right? Yep. You watch that and you're like, dear me.
Hey, so
I'm looking at the age group in the room here, and I'm guessing me and Subs had to sit through Laurie McMenemy. I wouldn't wish that on me worst. I wouldn't even wish that on Newcastle.
Well, you might.
I don't know about that.
He might have came in if Pardew had gone. He's the kind of appointment that Ashley might have made.
The interesting thing, though, of Subs about this whole old school philosophy, two up front, and they're like, I mean, Martin O'Neill played two up front, and we never touched the ball. Because we just got overrun in the midfield. Martin O'Neill did like a counter attack on football, but not to that extent. Because he used to come out in press conferences and say, you know, I'm not asking the players not to touch the ball, not to dictate a game. You know, we just aren't getting the ball. And I would just scratch my head and think, don't play 4-4-2 then.
Change it round.
How can people not see this?
Remember QPR? Played 4-4-2 for about how long? 20 minutes? And then he had to put Graham on the left side. Because we were getting tortured, even though I think we'd gone 1-0 up in the game. Played 4-4-2. Everyone was going, you got to play Fletcher. You got to play Fletcher and Graham together. And they did, and he did, and they got beat 3-1 at QBR. I mean, it does.
Kenny Orr tried it as well.
That went well, didn't it?
Exactly.
That went really well.
The biggest problem Gus has got with playing this system is he hasn't got Fabio Borelli this season. And as we've just
we haven't got
up,
through another week.
We can't get through a podcast without mentioning this problem. We all do it. We're all guilty of it.
As we just touched upon earlier, you know, like Sob said, like Wickham's not that kind of player, and I honestly think the lad's suffering. I know he scored a couple of goals, but I think the lad's suffering playing in that role because he just doesn't suit him whatsoever.
Well, I asked Gareth early about Wickham. Gareth thought he had a decent game. I thought he was awful, personally. What do people think?
That curate eggs thing, isn't it? He's sort of good in patches. Mm. And then there was times
first 20 minutes I thought he was decent.
Monday night there was part of it where he just switched off.
Goodness me, on Monday night. I haven't seen...
He doesn't get his head up.
He doesn't, but I don't... You know, He was a big part of keeping Sunderland up last season, playing in the middle. The kid's obviously got his heart set on playing in the middle. That's where he plays. That's where it suits him best. Obviously, Fletcher's doing a decent job there at the minute. But I don't think we're doing him any favours at all by us. I know we haven't got anything else, but you'd be more...
on the bench for him, though.
Well, I think you'd be better off bringing him on as impact. So the way he's playing at the minute out wide, I honestly think if Alvarez gets fit, then you'd be better off giving him a go.
Yeah.
Out there, he'd be more suited to playing that kind of role.
Gus seems to have this thing where he doesn't like two fair players at once, does he? Because you saw the crowd's reaction when he took Johnson off instead of Wickham. But I don't think it was because Buckley was coming on, personally.
I thought it was just because people wanted Wickham to go off.
It seemed to be crying out for two players like that,
for
whatever reason.
Work,
yeah. What's he playing at, bringing him on? Goal, thanks.
Well,
did the same Monday night as well. You know, he said it's about time, you know, Buckley's had a good spell, but he's coming up against the brick wall now. Mm-hmm. Get Johnson on, so he put Altidore on, and then a minute later, Buckley runs, waltzes the front and gives it to Gomez, who scores.
It's good that he's got play, because we said that he obviously had a problem when the likes of Alvarez and Jack O'Reilly got injured. We said he didn't have many game changes, so I guess it's good the way he is sort of alternating Johnson and Buckley, because what he's doing then is he's making sure he does have an impact player on the bench, I guess, where if he started both those guys, all he would maybe have is Wickham and Altidore maybe to come on and change the game. You wouldn't be that confident.
Don't agree on.
What did you, those players could do that.
What did you think? What did you think of Johnson yesterday? Sunday?
I said before that he was looking for an outlet a lot of the time. I thought he had a decent game, not his best, but to say it was a target he was wanting that wasn't there.
What about you, Gary?
Pretty much the same as Sobs, really. I mean, I'm not. I hate having a go at the kid, but I haven't been his biggest supporter. I've got to admit, I was on this show not so long back and got told I knew nothing about football as long as I didn't think Adam Johnson was playing well. So he paid 11 million quid for a winger who doesn't cross the ball at the time. He just couldn't put a cross on a Pool's coupe. And I got
do you
told
still that do that, put crosses on Pool's coupons in this day and age? Do you still do that though? Is that
you put a cross in your football coupon, don't you?
Is it a cross?
Well,
I don't know.
Put it in a betting slip.
It's like a little through ball.
Do you watch it all online now? Online then?
Not at the station.
Are you asking the question, Gareth, about Johnson?
I was just curious. I was just a bit...
So follow that up with your opinion.
I do feel a bit sorry for him sometimes when he gets binned after an hour. But I just didn't... I could understand why he took it.
He's a victim of us not having that midfielder to link things personally.
He just drifted about.
He can't get the ball in the areas we want him.
Yeah,
to get
exactly.
It.
He was taking up positions and he wasn't getting it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like he didn't function. In my opinion, yeah. On Sunday, he didn't function in the way that they wanted him to. That when I said at the start, I thought 10 of the 11 players were, very good. He was the one where I wouldn't say he was bad.
Yeah.
But just what didn't happen for him.
I mean, to play a devil's advocate, I mean, to be fair to the lad, I think so much has been heaped on him because he was doing, like, he had this role at Man City where he seemed to come off the bench every week and now turn it on.
But they have now players who are going to get the ball and they're going to give it to him. Go and attack that last man at him. And there's a ball, put it on a plate for him. And that isn't going to happen here, is
it? Well, no. And I think it's a bit like... when O'Shea and Brown first came, they were used to playing in a really good Man United side, and then all of a sudden they had to dig in every week because they were playing in a below par at that time.
Stood out when O'Shea was playing fullback, definitely, because he always looked okay for my new fullback. But when you're playing right back for Man United, you have a centre midfielder, probably two centre midfielders coming asking for the ball. You have a winger in front of you coming asking for it. Suddenly at Sunderland, you're like, oh, I've got to find a pass here. There isn't much movement ahead of me here, and I've got to find something. Yeah. He was exposed for that, wasn't he?
I think like so much is heaped on Johnson because of this, the way he was at City and the £11 million price tag that everybody was expecting him to be this game changer every week, every time he touched the ball. And you know, he had that purple patch last season. You thought you were finally getting to see the real Adam Johnson, but it was just a month or so of this absolutely amazing month where everything he seemed to try came off, and now we're back there scratching our heads thinking, what do we do? What do we do about Adam Johnson?
It was some promising quotes from Gus, wasn't it, in the week, saying how he's had a lot of conversations with him and you're talking about how to get him into the positions I want him to get into. Which is good, and maybe over time it'll happen. It just didn't happen. I'm not going to slag Adam Johnson off, and I understand why people were frustrated when they took him off, because the change that people probably were thinking is Wickham off and Buckley on and then have the two wingers. But you know, it worked. I mean, the thing, and Wickham, you know, I know you're saying about him playing wide, but he is trying to replicate that position, isn't he? That Brini was playing. And at the same time, Wickham, he's playing out of position. He wants to play up front, but I want to see more from him. I want to see a passion and a desire there to be in the team, to play for Sunderland, to think, I'm going to play here and do a really good job and then get my chance.
It would be up front. I struggle to see where it would fit in.
It would just be up front in the role that Fletcher is playing. That's what it would be. But the thing about him is he doesn't show
chances like Fletcher does, though.
He probably won't. No,
that's a thing.
But he just doesn't look like he wants.
But have you seen Wickham score that header?
Put the hard yards
in against Crystal Palace.
Not at the minute, but I think he proved towards the end of last season that if he gets a run of games in his preferred position, that he knows where the net is. It's just a case of Fletcher's a bit sharper than him at the minute, and he's being asked to do a role which doesn't really suit him. I think if Gus had had, obviously, Barini, I mentioned him again, or even Jattarini available, Wickham probably wouldn't have gotten as much game time this season as he's seen, because Fletcher's producing the goods, and so he stays where he is, and Wickham's being asked to do the legwork, as it was,
a lot
the
of people,
role that doesn't suit him.
A lot of people suggesting he's just in the team subs because of the contract situation.
Is that possible.
A bit cynical, do you think, or do you think it's fair?
It is a little bit cynical. Contract situations really, really bug me, because I think it's a situation that doesn't exist when you've only got a few weeks left. But the way the finances are now, you know, you cannot afford to let a contract run down, lose a lad for nought when you could get a few million quid for him. It's just not. It's unfortunately part of the business side of football that they've got to look at, and along there with I'm not playing him anymore, otherwise we'll have to fork out another 50 grand. We'll stop him on 49 appearances.
We could be really cynical and say we're glad he's in the team not doing well because it weakens his hand and the mate's got more chance of signing him back on.
I don't know about that. He'd rather, you would love him to do well.
I'm rooting for him generally,
this sort of thing that we're doing here, it's an opportunity event and have your opinion and you'll criticise players and you'll not have your favourites, you'll have your favourites and people have got all sorts of different opinions, but bottom line is you want them all to go out there and perform well and be successful, and with Wigan it just is the desire to be successful. There is the desire to go, well, I don't want to play wide left, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it as best I can, and then I'm going to force my way into the side up front. Is it, you know, you just, I just don't see that in him. I just don't see it. I mean, comparably Fletcher and Wickham, you're right, he wouldn't take those chances, but you know, you got to remember they came from very different footballing backgrounds, and you know, Fletcher's a good 6-7 years older than Conor Wickham. So
is it Admiral?
Dear me.
Admiral.
That's not a word either.
I can't say it.
Sun FM newsreader Stephen Goldsmith.
What I would do is break down that word properly.
Admirable.
Yes. I'm not even going to say
well
it.
Well said, that man.
Yeah. Okay. All
right. Is it admirable that you can't say admirable?
No, obviously not. Yeah. But, okay. Is it worth noting that Sunderland have.
That doesn't even mean the same thing.
Got to a stage. Shut up. I've got to a stage where. We have, you know, a decent amount of points on the board, and we're getting by coping without some of these attacking players making a huge impact. Like Gary just said there, Adam Johnson last month, player of the month for one season, made a huge difference for us. So, yeah. I mean, Fletcher's played a couple of games where he's taking his chances, but, you know, without the likes of Alvarez and Jacarini, and we're coping, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, Alvarez is a funny one in that. I can't see him starting games for a long while. I just can't see him. Like, I've only seen him a few times, but I just feel as though if he started, he might get a bit lost, you know, early on. He might need to come in. I think Jack Rainey's a massive miss. Like, you kind of take it for granted that he's there, and he's a very good player.
The way he was towards the end of last season, he was just down at Old Trafford in the league, absolutely, you know, run them to death.
Yeah. And, I thought he was very good at Burnley when he got in the game. He got injured. Mm-hmm. I thought he was the best player on the pitch, and he can take up that wide left position. And he's a clever player, you know. It's not been because it was like the big signing, and it was an exciting one. It hasn't quite maybe gone as everyone wanted.
Yeah,
it kind of taints it a bit. But when he's not there, you're like, oh, like having that option of Jacarini, and he does lots of good stuff.
Yeah. I think the thing for Gus is, I mean, hopefully, fingers crossed, Stanley and now, he'll get the time, but because of the financial restraints in terms of financial fair play, the club's trying to do it on the cheap, as it were, that he's probably going to need 3 transfer windows till he gets, you know, what he wants in terms of having enough strength in depth. So if Jacarini's out, then he's got another Jacarini or somebody very similar to put in instead of playing Wickham, you know. And if he's got a couple of defenders out, he's got options there to bring people in. Right, I mean, the defence has virtually been picking itself because of the injuries, and which is not what he wants. He wants competition for places. So I think he's got to be given, you know, a couple of transfer windows, and hopefully he'll find a way of getting there. I mean, don't think Butley's the finished article yet, but I don't think he's let anybody down, and you know, Gus sort of brought him in for next to nothing, so he's got to go, try and go and do that again and then maybe it's again, and all of a sudden you'll have a Gus Poirier team, and then you say, right, can we play that system? Are we good enough to play that system? Is the squad good enough to play that system? So it's going to take time. You've just got to be patient, unfortunately.
Well, we'll have to finish on a certain player talking about fitting into systems and stuff. I think Liam Bridcutt deserves a special mention. We've mentioned before how he's often been harshly criticised because he's in the same kind of player as Cattermole. But Sobs, I thought, you know, if you're looking for a player to epitomise a side that maintains concentration and focus for the most part, apart from the one little mishap he did have that Gareth mentioned, but I thought, you know, he's very regimented in his task, and I thought he was huge in the way that
first half he was fantastic. He did everything right first half, I think he suffers a little bit because he's not a very big fella, and if they get a big lad bullying him, it's a problem for him. But he did first half spot on, second half, like we said, apart that one horrible moment where it looked like he'd killed us. But he didn't look too clever in some earlier games this season, but he's got that out of his system, thankfully.
I mean, he came on at Crystal Palace, Gary, and we mentioned, and he had an impact. He set up the third goal. We were saying that could be crucial for him going into this game, so he certainly carried it on. You feel like he needed a performance like that at home in front of the crowd, like in front of the home crowd.
Yeah, I mean, like we've touched upon, I'm just so pleased that he wasn't punished, obviously, for that one Rick, because I think that's all people would have been talking about, you know. I don't think we've missed Callum Wall's leadership a little bit, maybe. I think he's a big miss when he's, you've noticed more how much you miss him when he's out of the side, Callum Wall. But he didn't do anything wrong. Like Tob said, he had a good, steady first half, and he had that little error in the second half. But, you know, it's going to take time. These players can't just come in. Like, if they haven't been playing, they can't just come in and just pick up where they left off. You need a run of games to get up to speed and what have you. And, you know, through no fault of his own, maybe
he's had a lot of personal stuff going on as well, hasn't he? Which, you know, to acknowledge.
Yeah. I mean, which is obviously played on. Whatever you say, you know, you can't just switch off from that stuff. You'd like to, but I think personal stuff is going to be in the back of his mind somewhere. So he's had a lot to deal with. I don't think he's let anybody down, and I think he'd probably get better if he gets a run of games. But the way Callum Wall's playing,
well, that's it. Gareth, does he give Gus a decision to make?
Well, it kind of does, I think.
Seems silly that the idea that Callum Wall wouldn't come back in, but Gus keeps saying, if you're ready and you prove yourself in the side, you'll stay in the side. Yeah. He comes out and says that most games.
I think the only thing I would say there is that Callum Wall is much more of a leader on the pitch.
I agree.
And I think for that reason alone, Gus will probably put him straight back in to use his leadership qualities in the middle of the park.
I mean, the midfield functioned very well yesterday, though, that middle three, which I thought that was probably the most complete sort of performance from the midfield this season. Still not sure about Gomez, but it's difficult to drop players when you're playing well. But they have played well the last two games.
Tell you what, midfield would be good if you want to just shut up shop for a game.
Admirable effort.
Yeah. he could play a Bridcut and then Callamore and Rodwell ahead of him. Not many people would get through that midfield.
Well, I thought Bridcut was a bit more dynamic than I remember. Yes, I felt as though he was a bit more expansive.
Well, we were told he was like this by the Brighton fans we spoke to.
And he put that cross in.
Said he created angles and he opened up space.
He put that cross in at the end for Brown, didn't he, for that header. Getting into sort of, the game went on, he was getting himself into positions you wouldn't expect him to find him in, taking risks.
It sounds ridiculous because he's played there most of his career, but I think he's got to grow into the role in terms of, at Brighton, he was probably one of the major voices in the dressing room, and he did it his way, what have you. Now he's come in, he's not necessarily first choice. Callum Wall's probably one of the biggest voices in the changing room. He's probably sat back a little bit and sort of putting the odd word in now and again. And it's going to take time for him to sort of assert himself on the side. I don't think anybody just comes in and does that straight away. You've got to be there at the club a while before you become one of the sort of voices in the changing room, unless you're a massive, massive personality. I think it takes you a while for you to put your stamp on things.
Definitely.
All right. Okay, well, I found a new word that I have to consciously leave out of my bulletins in future. I'm going to go home and practice that one. We won't be here next week because of the international thing, but we are doing Into the Light with Sun FM on Thursday, so join us for that. We have the under-21 head coach, Robbie Stockdale, in the studio. So we'll discuss throwing the kids in. So make sure you listen to that. But we're going to have another live podcast, which is overdue, Monday the 8th of December.
You don't like the way you've introduced that live podcast.
Why?
Because it was just too, boring. It was just like running the million.
Come on, then. You give us your excitable version of that.
I know everyone's been asking us about it. We've had a lot of emails and
tweets. The enthusiasm is just dripping off you, I must say.
And I'm being understated. All right.
It's like being in the house.
I know. Yeah. I don't know where I came from, to be honest.
We won't get the
flash. Did I crack on or not?
Nah. Go on then. No, you can do it. I'm just saying, you know, people have been desperate for this live podcast for such a long time now, and it's finally here. Well, that's a lie.
There you go. It's built up for you now. It is overdue. Monday the 8th of December. at the newly refurbished Dunkow. Looks very nice as well.
Been in a couple of times.
Yep. I haven't been in. It looks
enjoyable,
nice, I have to say.
Enjoyable pint.
Yeah. But we'll have a panel of journalists and an ex-Sunderland player. We think we know who, but we're waiting for confirmation. So it'll be a good time to assess the season so far. Get over if you can. You'll be able to get your tickets from the Love Supreme online shop to do that. £4. Well worth it, Gareth.
Probably.
For the banter.
That word.
Oh. He said it. He wrote it down. We discussed it, and he's gone for it.
Just throwing it out. He's taking the pin out.
But the best thing about it is, well, you can take or leave that word, because you can take it seriously, or you can take it in the ironic way that it's presented, and you're a winner both ways.
Maybe there's a clue in it to who's going to be on the panel. I'm not saying that Richard Keys isn't back in the country for Christmas, but he might be. Who knows?
No, we want people to buy tickets.
he might buy them all. You don't know. Then he can say it was sold out on his blog. Richard Keys, the key, was it? On his blog, have you seen that?
I've read a couple of them, just for the...
Yeah,
the
it says something. He's got, like, it's got your key to sport or something, and there's, like, a picture of a key on his thing.
Oh, God. Wow. That seems such a shame that we're going to have to go out on that, but more details to follow.
Genius.
No, it's because if you think this is bad... Get over there, Richard Keys,
yeah.
Blog.
Give us £4, yeah.
Do you think our website's rubbish? Get over there.
More details will follow on that. Thanks for listening. Over and out.